future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
That's right, the bullpen is live here on a Saturday. Andrew Carlson and Joe George alongside our guy Josh behind the glass. Look, we're here for our once every 3 week experience, you know, Joe. I think that's the rate we're sort of trending at right now.
I'm gone next week.
Yeah, so that tracks. About once every 3 weeks, Joe and I get together and we do a show, and sometimes we've got a show with somebody else in between. We're here up until 2 o'clock. If you want to get in on any of the action, hit us up on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, or find us on Twitter. Joe's at Joe George Radio. I'm at Carlson Radio. Boy, Josh is at I Am J Chevy. So, lots to get into here. Astros obviously played the Dodgers last night. Really boring game, really ugly game. Ended 3-2. We're about to talk about that in just a second. Obviously, reaction to everything that went down with the Rockets and the NBA draft on Thursday night. But look, we're nowhere else to start other than Astros versus those damn no-good, dirty Dodgers. And before we even get into the game, Joe, I was really anticipating a lot more from the crowd out in Los Angeles last night at Dodger Stadium. Given everything that had been spewed out by the media, especially that knob, Bill Plaschke. I was trying to find the adjective or the word to describe him because I just don't like the guy at all.
Yeah, he sucks.
After everything that had been spewed out from the LA media over the past few days, I was anticipating a cauldron and a lot of vitriol coming out from Los Angeles. And generally speaking, they let me down.
Yeah, not much there. Look, they showed up 40% capacity, it looked like, at the start of the game because people in LA can't get to games on time.
They can't do anything on time, frankly.
No, they can't. They're a total clown show. I mean, the fact that there was the amount of Astros fans I saw going to the game wearing Dodgers gear because they felt like they were in fear of their life shows you what such a scumbag city that is. Because, like, Bill Plaschke wants to talk about boo the Astros. Last time I checked, it wasn't an Astros game in which a Giants fan nearly got stabbed to death.
Yeah, like, the Dodgers fans are the scum of the earth, from at least from a baseball fan perspective.
Yep.
I don't believe there's another stadium really in our country where you have to consistently fear the way that you have to fear for your, not, I don't want to say necessarily for your life, but fear for your safety the way you have to do out in Dodger Stadium. And Giants fans over the past decade plus can really attest to that. So, look, I was expecting a lot more from a anger perspective, and I will give them credit. They only booed Altuve and Bregman. That shows a level of learning that I wasn't sure Dodgers fans were really capable of.
Yes.
So credit to them for that.
Yeah, look, there's three players left from 2017 on the roster, and what, two are playing? And that's it, right?
Yeah, and you managed to boo the only two that were in the lineup last night.
Good
so
job.
Congratulations. Well done, Dodger fans. But moving into the game and what we saw last night, look, this Astros lineup is a serious problem. I think we all know and understand that at this point. But J.P. France was, I don't want to say exceptional, but he was solid again. And he's getting to the point where I think that I'm feeling relatively comfortable with him as the fourth or fifth arm in the rotation.
Yeah, he's not a Cy Young winner, but
he doesn't have to be.
He doesn't need to be. He's just good. Like, he is just a solid Major League Baseball pitcher. And he goes out there, and his road stats hadn't been great. So this was a really good start for him, a quality start. And this is what you need. When you've got a team that's beat down by injury the way that they are, like, you need someone like J.P. France to come in and step up and perform really well. And that's what he's done on a consistent basis since he started. Way more, obviously, than Belak or Blanco. Like, J.P. France is a guy that for the now and for next year, when you talk about not maybe having McCullers back, not having Garcia at the start of the season, like, J.P. France feels like a guy you can pencil in to eat innings, contribute to this baseball team, and he was good again last night. And frankly, like, when you have a guy like J.P. France on the mound and he gives you that outing against the Dodgers, even though both teams are in third place right now, almost identical records, you should win those baseball games.
Yeah, and that comes down to the fact that the lineup is continuing to perform extremely, extremely poorly. I mean, you look at what they did last night. They had the back-to-back home runs in the fourth. Outside of that, there was basically nothing. There was zero traffic on the base pass the entire night. And look, we gave some credit to J.P. Prance, but he worked out of some situations where there was some trouble. Dodgers had 9 hits to the Astros 3. Like, at some point, the Astros are going to need to make some changes with whatever is going on. And we've seen some small adjustments to the lineup here. We got Mauricio Dubon, who seemingly might be the Astros' new everyday first baseman, the way that things are trending. It's very frustrating because you're not going to get these sort of outings from J.P. France or one of these guys in the back of the lineup consistently, especially in that environment on the road. And anytime you do get that level of performance from them and you're not able to bring it out with a win, it just feels like a wasted game.
Yeah, absolutely. The Astros have a real problem right now. Like, there is no denying that their offense is a problem. Michael Schwab tweeted these stats out this morning. The Astros had 3 hits last night. Dodgers had 9. Houston is 5-28 this season when out-hit by their opponents. They're also 4-27 when scoring 3 or fewer runs. On the other side, the Astros are 37-8 when scoring 4 more runs and 31-4 when they're out-hitting their opponent. That tells you everything you need to know.
When they hit, they win. If they don't, they're taking an L.
And because they're not even scoring, the Dodgers scored 3 runs last night. The Astros had 3 hits.
Yeah.
And 2 of those hits were runs. They were the back-to-back jacks early on the game from Dubon and Tucker. Their offense is getting nothing, and they can't put it together. Like, when Bregman is doing well, Abreu's bad. When Abreu's good, Bregman's bad. Altuve, obviously, has been a little bit up and down so far. Tucker, while he's been solid, hasn't been great. Like, you're getting mixed production out of center field, mixed production out of Jeremy Peña. Like, the only great player you had on offense was Jordan Alvarez, and he started running yesterday. So it's potentially, like, good news that he could be back soon. But if the Astros can't score runs, you're not going to win baseball games. And frankly, this was a problem last year. We all just got to ignore it because the pitching was so damn good and was so awesome, and you had Jordan Alvarez for most of the season. You had him for most of this season, but you had big moments from those guys that carried you through, and they're just not getting that right now. And when you look at this team, I think J.P. France, like, to kind of connect the two, he makes me feel, like, less stressed about acquiring an arm at the deadline.
Oh, 100%.
While I think it's still a necessity because of what you've seen from Hunter Brown in his last couple starts, where people have tried really hard to anoint him Justin Verlander already, and he's just not that guy yet. He's a rookie pitcher. His max pitching innings was 126 before this year. He's going to blow past that. Like, while, like, you need help in the rotation and maybe even in the bullpen, your lineup's a huge problem. And, like, the Astros right now, this is really, like, the first time where, like, I agree with Fangraphs that they're less than a 50% chance they're going to win the division. I'll be honest, like, hot take, whatever. I don't think the Astros are going to win the division this year. I think we're at that point now where, like, I feel comfortable saying that the Rangers are too far ahead, that, yes, they could go on a huge run, but the Rangers are a really good baseball team. And if they don't start to get their act together, like, they're not going to win the division. The big difference maker is going to be next weekend when they play that 4-game series with the Rangers. If they were to sweep that series or take 3 or 4, obviously my tone will change. But, like, as of right now, I don't see it. Like, they're going to make the playoffs. And if they make the playoffs, I think they can still win the World Series, just like in 2020 where they went to Game 7 of the ALCS. Just get in. That's all that matters. But, like, right now, winning the division, if that's important to you, I think it's starting to get to the point where, like, the offense is letting you down.
Yeah, and what you said right there, just get in, that sort of feels like where the Astros are right now. The division needs to be an afterthought at the moment.
Yeah.
Right now, you just need to consolidate your team in whatever way you can so that you can solidify yourself in a playoff spot in one of those wild card positions. Because the reality is, like you mentioned, Joe, like, what we've seen from the Astros this year, we are far enough into the season where we can say, hey, this is who they are. Like, as currently constructed, this is who the Astros are, and that's not just going to magically change with the flip of a switch. Maybe when everybody gets healthy, the lineup starts clicking. But I've got zero faith that that's going to be the case, and I think you're 100% right. Assuming that Jose Urquidy comes back at some level of, you know, health where he can approximate the best that he's brought the Astros, I think that the bat is by far the biggest need and the biggest acquisition that Dana Brown needs to make at the trade deadline, because the reality is, yes, we need to ease the burden on Hunter Brown, and I think it's very clear at this point that, well, he is the Astros' third-best pitcher in the rotation. Look, Yeah, I don't believe that he's someone that you can rely on to just be lights out every single time he hits the mound. He's just not that guy yet. And with that being the case, you're going to need somebody to ease the burden on him. So you're going to need to. But what we've seen with the lineup, Bat is a big bat, or maybe not a big bat, but someone who can at least contribute on a consistent basis is far and away what this team needs most. Because, look, if they don't start hitting to some degree, they might not make the playoffs. Like, as crazy as it is to say, like, the AL is going to be very competitive for those back couple wild card spots. And if they don't start hitting, there's a decent chance. I'm going to say it's probably 50-50 or thereabouts right now that the Astros may not be in the playoffs come the end of the season.
Look, the fact that the Astros, like, as of today, are still the number two wild card team, like, the way they've been playing, to me, is a miracle. And part of that's because everyone in that range that you're talking about is at 500 or below in their last 10 games. You know, the Astros are 4-6 in their last 10. The Yankees are 3-7. The Blue Jays are 4-6. The Angels are 5-5. Like, while, like, you're not playing your best baseball, those teams aren't either. And that, to me, is, like, where, like, they've gotten a break. Like, do I still believe the Astros are a World Series contender? Absolutely. But if you've got blinders on, if you don't think that the Astros are going to potentially not win the division this year, because, like, I get it, Willie. You want to bring up the Phillies. The Phillies at this point last year were 6.5 games back. On the last game of the season, they clinched the last wild card spot of the season. The Astros are not chasing wild card teams right now, 6.5 games back. If they were 6.5 games back of the LA Angels for the last wild card spot, I would still feel okay about them making the wild card. I think it's time to stop disrespecting the Rangers. This isn't necessarily an anti-Astros thing in this moment. It's you got to see that, like, the Rangers are a very good baseball team. And while I agree, at some point their bats will fall off, what they're doing collectively is unreal. Like, it's 2019 Astros light. But to chase down all those games is daunting. And even if you make a big move at the deadline, yes, there's a lot of baseball. There's a lot of baseball left. But at this point, the focus is get healthy and get in the playoffs. And then when they get there, I trust the Astros to be better than the Rangers, the Orioles, the Yankees, whoever's in their way to still get to the World Series. It's just right now, it's ugly. And the offense, it needs to come together. And we can all hope and pray that Michael Brantley is part of that solution. But, dude, I'll believe that when I see it, too.
That's what concerns me. Is it seems like there's a trend with the Astros where all of a sudden they're counting on Michael Brantley coming back again. And that just simply cannot be the case. I would love to see Uncle Mike back in the lineup on a every other day type basis. But until, like you said, until he's in the lineup, I'll believe that he's actually there. I won't believe that Michael Brantley is playing for the Astros again until I legitimately see him on the field with my own two eyes.
He was so close. Like, he was playing great baseball in Sugar Land. He was right there, and then the inflammation popped back up. The concern is that this inflammation is just unpredictable, and, like, you just can't rely on him, even if he does come back. Like, it's just, it's a huge unknown. I think we would all love to see Michael Brantley have one more moment in the Astros that's not just a speech in the clubhouse that we didn't see. But, like, I'll believe it when I see it.
100%. 100%. He's Joe George. I'm Andrew Carlson. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, the Rockets knocked it out of the park on the NBA draft on Thursday night. We react to what they did, the picks they made, and how it affects and how it impacts the future looking forward for the Houston Rockets. It's coming up next on The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5, the only Houston sports station with a bidet.
And the bidet, should it break, is there a bidet repairman on site?
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
That's right, The Bullpen is back here, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. About to get into some Rockets NBA draft talk. If you want to get in on the HRMP listener line or text line, feel free to do so. 713-780-3776. Would love to get the input from some of you guys on what the Rockets were able to pull off Thursday night. Joe, I feel like this is one of those times where universally the reaction to something is just immensely positive. There are very few times in sports where basically universally across national media, local media, fan bases, everything else, the reaction to something is positive. Mm-hmm. But with what the Rockets did on Thursday night, drafting Amen Thompson at 4 and then getting Cam Whitmore to fall in their laps all the way at 20, I can't remember the last time I saw this much positive energy about the Rockets.
Yeah, you kind of saw it happening on Thursday night. Like, as Whitmore got selected, just the tweets started flowing in. Like, that the Rockets crushed it. What a night for the Rockets. This is a franchise changer. Like, it was, it really felt like there was a tone shift in the narrative of what the future of this franchise is. And honestly, like, I agree. Amen Thompson, some of the stuff is, look, I try to act like I know what I'm talking about sometimes. I don't know how to get really anything out of Overtime Elite and watching some of those games that he played in, because the quality of competition was so garbage that, like, I don't really, like, I don't know if I should be concerned that he didn't drop 40 every night on them, him and his brother, because, like, the quality of players is bad. But he also, like, had great moments in them, and just it felt like it was lower level college basketball, and even like the lowest level of college basketball you could probably be in. But then him and then getting Cam at 20 is just astonishing.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing, too, is like it's a tough balance to strike when it comes to scouting the player versus scouting the competition.
Yeah.
Right? Because obviously the talent jumps off the page with Amen Thompson. Like, you see the athleticism, the playmaking ability, the creativeness he has with what he can do off the dribble and in the air, and you feel like that should be able to play anywhere. But then again, like, look, he's like also mentioned, like you mentioned, he's playing against just some garbage competition, if we're being honest. But at the same time, is it significantly worse than some of these guys we've seen go play in like Australia? Like, LaMelo Ball played in Australia and did relatively well. And I understand that that's pro basketball versus whatever Overtime Elite is with, you know, 16 to 20 year olds. But the reality is we've seen guys come from all different levels of competition. And if the talent is there, the talent will play. And I truly believe that the talent will play with Amen Thompson. You want to talk about somebody who is a home run swing from Rafael Stone and the Rockets front office? That's what this guy is. The NBA is a superstar driven league. And outside of Victor Wembanyama and maybe Scoot Henderson, there is nobody who has the potential, if they reach it, to be a superstar like what we have with Amen Thompson.
Yeah, 100%. The athleticism is there. The passing is there. The effort's there. The work ethic is really there. The biggest thing with him is the jump shot. But most of these guys are broken. I mean, Victor Wembanyama's jump shot is broken. Like, he doesn't shoot. He's got good mid-range game. Like, his three-point percentage is not where you hope it is long-term. None of it is. Like, it was the same with Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, like, LaMelo Ball, any guy you want. Like, how many guys shoot the lights out in college as a star player and then come into the NBA and contribute right away? There's not a lot of them.
They're very few.
And when they do, they're J.J. Redick. Like, they're guys who are great shooters, but they're not elite players. Because typically it seems like the shooting comes last. I think part of that's because when you're a guy like Amen Thompson, like, you're so much better, you're so much faster, bigger, stronger than like everyone you've ever played basketball with, besides maybe your brother, that, like, you don't have to learn a jump shot.
Now, I will say this might be a totally not valid concern, but you mentioned the work ethic, and it's NBA draft season, so we get all sorts of propaganda with how much players are, you know, in the gym, and there was talk about, him and his brother are in there 10 to 12 hours a day, and then sometimes they have a room upstairs that they sleep in, so they never have to leave the gym. Am I wrong to be a little concerned that he's spending that much time in the gym and his jump shot is still broken?
No.
Like, that concerns me just ever so slightly, that my man's in the gym for like 10 to 12 hours a day and the jumper's still broke.
Okay, I said the same thing the other day with Blank. It doesn't necessarily add up. It's like why it's so broken. But this is where I will counter, is that a lot of these kids in the NFL and in the NBA, development is broken.
That's fair.
Development of these players is severely, severely broken. And they're not being developed by quality coaches. They're not being, you know, reputable coaches. And people don't look at Lonzo Ball. I think Lonzo Ball is really like one of the best examples we've ever had. When he was at UCLA, his hands would go to the left side of his face and he would shoot over the middle and it was broken. His last season, maybe his last season ever in the NBA at this point, he shot over 40% from three. Like, a guy, like, he fixed his jump shot.
Yeah.
Like, now, is it a guarantee? No. Like, look at Jalen Green. Jalen Green, they worked on that jump shot year one. John Lucas III and him did. And his second half of the season was really strong. But then, like, it rebroke in the offseason. Markelle Fultz. Now, he was hurt, it seems like, early on in his career with Philly. Like, he's kind of figured it out.
Right.
So, like, you can fix it. And if the work ethic is there, that's a positive. Because at least he's going to try. Like, he's not a Jamarcus Russell. He's not an Anthony Bennett. Like, he's not these guys in pro sports who have had all the promise in the world and done absolutely nothing with it. It really is going to come down to Udoka. And, like, the Rockets coaching staff, you know, even, like, who did they hire yesterday? Tiago Splitter? Like,
I don't know about all that.
Like, Kelly, I think Kelly Eco tweeted that out.
Yeah,
like,
Tiago Splitter, who, like, spent some time with Udoka in Brooklyn, I believe.
It's about, like, the coaching staff you have assembled and fixing his jump shot and, like, what's good. The thing I like about him, man, is that, like, the mid-range game is solid. Like, I think it's going to come along. But the other thing, Andrew, is if it doesn't, isn't that okay?
Yeah.
This roster?
That's what I was about to say, is even if the jump shot doesn't come along to where you want it to be, it's not going to be the worst thing in the world. Your guy Jeremy Branham made a comparison that I was making on draft day where Amen Thompson, in theory, if he reaches his potential but doesn't get a jumper, could be like a souped-up version of Rajon Rondo.
Awesome.
And that's a fantastic player. I mean, Rondo had some legendary performances in the playoffs going head-to-head with guys like LeBron, Dwayne Wade, when he was with the Boston Celtics. And if you can get a taller, longer, more athletic version of Rajon Rondo on this Rockets team, I would bite your hand off for that right now. Yeah. No questions asked.
Rajon Rondo, peak Rondo with Jalen Green and Jabari Smith and Alperen Şengün, like, if you just change the name to Rajon Rondo, that's a huge win. And, like, this is a guy where, like, he almost could be, like, somewhere in between Rondo and Westbrook. Where, like, you know, Rajon Rondo, people forget that, like, when they won their title,
he was a key piece of that. They're not winning those titles without him.
And his threes, like, he would contribute at times from the three-point line. Was it always consistent? No. But, like, he was a great distributor. He was a very good athlete, good on defense. Like, if Amen Thompson is Rajon Rondo, that's a win. I know it's a low floor, and I know people hear top five pick, Rajon Rondo, not good enough, but the way these guys are busting out of the league in the NBA and contributing nothing, if you got me Rondo at this point, like, would you rather have Rajon Rondo or Zach LaVine?
Ooh. I think that Rondo is a...
Josh, I see you in there.
I think he's a bigger contributor to winning basketball. And it's tough because LaVine was never in the environments that Rondo was, where he had that same level of talent around him. But I think Rondo as a tertiary piece, which in theory is what Amen Thompson could end up being, is a significantly better contributor to a winning basketball team than Zach LaVine would be. Zach LaVine needs to be the star on a team or needs to be the centerpiece. And frankly, I don't think he can be the winning centerpiece.
Yeah. Josh?
I'm gonna back a lot of what Andrew said. It depends on the role that you're gonna put him in more than anything.
100%.
If you're telling me, like, I'm starting the roster, like, I have nobody else, give me Zach LaVine.
Yeah.
But if I have, obviously, like, Jalen Green and other people who I could set the ball up to, then, yeah, give me
Rondo. But that's the thing is, like, if Jalen Green, like, a lot of people think, and I'm kind of one of them, that, you know, peak Jalen Green at this point is Zach LaVine. Like, if you told me that the Rockets' core of their roster was Rajon Rondo and Zach LaVine, like, there's something there. And, like, that's, like, I love what the Rockets did in this draft. You know, and the thing with Cam at 20, Cam Whitmore, is that it seems like there was some medical stuff. You know, Sam Vecenie was on Ryan Russillo's podcast. They talked to seven teams. Said three of them said that the medical stuff took them off the board. Four said, doesn't matter. I guess it was eight teams. And then one team said that we probably wouldn't take him top five, but, like, we're not too concerned. And then there was this analytical thing that he talked about where athletically, Cam Whitmore is the most athletic player in the NBA to enter the NBA since Anthony Edwards.
Look, I'll take that. Take that in a heartbeat. This Rockets team is going to be the most athletic team we've seen on the court in a long time.
Jalen Green is the oldest player, or KPJ will be the oldest player in the starting lineup.
Yeah. Look, they're going to make a lot of mistakes because, look, they're a young team, and there's a lot of growing that's going to have to be done with the guys who are going to be the primary ball handlers. But you want to talk about some just highlight reel plays that could be coming out of Toyota Center over the next couple of years. You are going to see some, like, high wire acts.
Some of the dunks that Amen would throw to his twin, Osir, in the Overtime Elite, I just like was like, he's going to be throwing those to Jalen Green. Like, that's going to be, like, really fun. Not Jalen Green, like, broke Jalen Green from the dunk contest, like, real Jalen Green, who, like, is actually a freak. Like, this is a really, really good core. Like, while they haven't won the lottery in the last 3 years, the Rockets have walked away with the pieces to put together long-term success. You just have to develop it right.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I believe that the talent is there. Anybody who is a basketball fan can look at that roster and look at all the young talent that's been assembled over the past three off seasons and say, there's a very, very good base off which to build on. The results is what needs to come now. Because if the results aren't coming, somebody's head is going to have to roll in terms of, it's not going to be Udoka. Like, it's going to be his first season. They're going to give him time to mold this team into whatever image he wants it to be. But, like, you can say whatever you want about Rafael Stone. The talent is there. Now it's up to the guys who are on the team and the coaching staff and whoever else to put it all together. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And look, in fact, the Rockets aren't the only rebuild in town that's seemingly headed in the right direction. The Texans have done a pretty good job, and they've made a bunch of waves there in, with their respective offseason as well. So we're going to make a little comparison, compare how the drafts went down, the job that the general managers have done, and who do you feel more positive about going forward, the Texans or Rockets? That's coming up next on The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com, Sports Scooby Snacks.
This sure is a creepy place.
Yeah.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Bullpen is back, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Andrew Carlson and Joe George with our guy Josh behind the glass. We're going to continue the Rockets draft conversation here. If you want to get in on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, or hit us up on Twitter. He's at Joe George Radio. I'm at Carlson Radio. Josh is at I Am J Chevy. So, teased it before the break. The Rockets obviously had one of the better drafts in recent memory for the franchise. I feel like the level of excitement that we've seen around the Rockets post-draft is relatively comparable to what we saw in the Texans post their draft. Obviously, sure. Going C.J. Stroud at 2, Will Anderson at 3. Now, the NFL draft clearly goes for many more rounds than the Rockets have selections to compare with. So I think generally speaking, it's probably going to be C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson versus Amen Thompson and Cam Whitmore. But just looking and comparing those drafts at face value, if you had to say, hey, I think that this franchise had the better draft, are you going with the Texans or the Rockets?
I'm going to go... It's a tough question because I'm going to say the Rockets I like more because I think... The shortcomings with Amen Thompson, I like his jump shot where it's not where you want it to be right now, could be very similar to some of C.J. Stroud's shortcomings. But C.J. Stroud has a lot more responsibility on his shoulders. He's the quarterback. Like, if he doesn't develop in one or two areas of his game, you know, reading NFL defense or, you know, perfecting certain passings, like, you know, passing to the sidelines, like, that kills you. If Amen Thompson doesn't turn into a great three-point shooter, but as a super athlete and a great passer. Still be a really good NBA player. Like, yeah, maybe he's not what you wanted, but I think people also just have, like, unrealistic expectations for what the NBA is anymore and are kind of out of touch, honestly, with reality of who these kids are coming out of college and coming out of these specialty programs like Overtime Elite and the G League. And Will Anderson, while I think he's a great player, and I think he's going to be a great player, there's a lot of draft capital attached to him, and there's no draft capital attached to Cam Whitmore. Like, I saw Jeremy tweet this out. Someone asked him what was the NFL equivalent. It'd be like Tyree Wilson.
Yeah.
If Tyree Wilson fell to 20, like, that would have been the similarity. I think just the better one is, honestly, the guy who fell is Nolan Smith. Like, a great player fell late into the draft for a little bit of medical, a little bit of size, and, you know, the Eagles are going to take advantage of that, and hopefully the Rockets are going to get this with Cam Whitmore. So I like the Rockets more just because... You know, it's when you talk about like hit rate, like you only need one of these guys to really hit to have a great night.
you mentioned the draft capital aspect with trading up to get Will Anderson. And, well, I understand that the cost to do that is a very fair point to make in terms of putting that into the equation. If we're talking just a pure talent baseline, I think the Texans probably brought in more than the Rockets. Just from a floor perspective of, I believe that Will Anderson is at a minimum, like at his worst, if everyone hits their worst possible outcome, I still think Will Anderson has the chance to be like a Pro Bowl type player. I don't see that with Amen. I don't see that with Cam Whitmore. And frankly, I don't see that really with CJ Stroud. So just from the talent acquisition standpoint, I believe the Texans probably had a better draft. It's just a matter of what does that cost you on down the line?
No, that's totally fair. Part of it is that you have a guy that just fell to you. Like Sam Vecenie just as the example, like he had Cam Whitmore as the third best player in the draft. Now, that's the highest I saw him. But most mock drafts going into the night had Cam going between picks 7 and 10.
Yeah, I didn't see him lower than 8 on basically any draft big board that was out there. Basically, the lowest you saw Cam Whitmore on any of those was 8, which tells you the level of talent that he was projected as from scouts and tells you just what a steal he was at 20.
Yeah, he could be – look, there is a very real reality where the best player the Rockets selected was at 20, not at 4, because it is a total – crapshoot. Like, think about it. In the NFL, you have 7 rounds, and the NFL expectation is that guys contribute from day one in the NFL. If you're taken in the first round or in the second round, if you're drafted in the third round, you are expected to contribute by year 2, year 3 at absolute most. The reality of the NBA is if you're selected outside sometimes the top 3, you're hopeful that player is a rotation player. Like, that's where, like, the disconnect is, like, that's happening, like, in the Twitch chat right now, is that a guy like Jairus Walker, some people want, he's being compared to Paul Millsap. Like, Paul Millsap's not a top 10 pick, guys, but, like, he is if that's your projection for Jairus Walker. The NBA, it's almost like your top 5 is what's similar to the NFL first round, and then your next 5 is a second round. Like, second-round picks, like, you once in a blue moon get a Jokic and a Draymond Green. Like, those guys don't grow on trees. Like, yes, the Miami Heat are the exception to the rule right now, but the reality is that in the NBA, the 60 players that are drafted, only a handful every single year are real contributors because the developmental process is terrible. There's a reason why the best players in the NBA right now are not born in this country. The best players in the NBA are Luka Doncic. They're going to be Victor Wembanyama. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo and Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
Like, there's our basketball system is real broke. Like,
100%.
Sorry.
100%. And if you look back at, like, even in, you're saying that, like, even in the top 3, you know, that's the guys that you're expecting to be superstars. You look back at the number 1 pick from the last 10 years. Go back to 2013. Anthony Bennett with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Sucks.
I don't even know if he's still playing basketball.
He is Canadian, though. I will say that. He is Canadian.
2014, also to the Cavs, Andrew Wiggins, who is a contributing player on a good team.
Perfect example. When Andrew Wiggins, I remember I was covering high
school basketball. He was the next Kobe.
I was covering high school basketball in Chicago. I'm at the McDonald's All-American. Jabari Parker, Andrew Wiggins, the twins from Kentucky were there. Like, it was, these guys are the next big deal. Andrew Wiggins, at his peak in his career, was a role player on a championship team. And when he was drafted, he was supposed to be the next Kobe.
Yeah. And then you keep going down the list. 2015, Carl Anthony Towns. I'll admit it. All pro slash all star level player.
He says he changed the game.
Did Not you hear quite. That? 2016, a favorite of the Twitch chat, apparently. Ben Simmons. We all know what's happened with Ben Simmons. Markel Fultz, DeAndre Ayton, Zion, Anthony Edwards, and then Cade, Paolo, and now Victor. Like, I think it's very clear that even at the top of the draft in the NBA, it is such a crapshoot with what you're getting. And that only filters down the further you go. And that's just to further your point, Joe. Like, the reality of the NBA draft is, once you get outside any given year, the top pick or top 2, you can't expect that player to come in right away and be a high-level impact starter. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, look, the best players in college basketball, they go undrafted. Drew Timmy has been one of the best college basketball players the last, like, 3 years at Gonzaga. He got, like, this weird, like, half contract from a team. It's just, it's hard to get a read on these guys. So it's about what you develop them when you get them into the league, what you turn them into. And you hope that you, like, think about it this way. Nick Caserio and the Texans, they have 22 starters. If they only hit on 20% of their first and second round picks, they're still a below average football team. And if they don't hit on CJ Stroud, it doesn't matter. If the Rockets have selected 9 players in the first round of the last 3 years. If they hit on 20% of those guys,
you're good.
You're good enough because you only have 5 starters. If Amen Thompson is your superstar and so is Shangoon and no one else,
that's all you need.
You're fine. Yeah, the Jabari Smith pick sucks then. But also, it's a lottery. Like, you get what you get and then you develop what you can. Like, all you have to do in the NBA, the way the cap is set up now with the new second, whatever they're calling it now, like the second window or whatever it is, to like really make it impossible for teams to spend. If 9 of these guys, if 2 of the 9 turn into like all NBA guys, the Rockets are a championship level contender. And honestly, it doesn't really matter what 2. You just need 2.
Yeah, and that's the difference between the 2, right? Outside of quarterback, which is its own discussion sort of entirely, like in the NBA, one player can drastically change and impact the direction of a franchise, the future of a franchise,
yep,
in ways that like it's just simply not possible at any other position in the NFL.
Yeah, besides quarterback, like you said, like it's Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow single-handedly changed the Cincinnati Bengals organization. Jalen Green could be that guy still for the Rockets. So could Jabari. So could Amen. Like,
so could Alpi. Any of these guys.
Cam. Like, the only one I would like not put my money on, like a KPJ. Like, like I'm out on Josh Christopher, yeah, those guys. But like, that's not who you're talking about. Like, there's 5 or 6 guys that, like, as long as 2 of them hit, the Rockets are in a really special place right now as a franchise.
The Rockets are in a great place. The Texans seem to be in a pretty solid place as well. So coming up next, going to continue the comparisons and how does the job that Rafael Stone has done at Toyota Center compare to what Nick Caserio has done with the Texans down at NRG? And who do you feel more positive about heading into the future? That's up next on the wheel, not on the wheelhouse, on the bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Bullpen here with you on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 up until 2 o'clock. Joe George and Andrew Carlson alongside Josh behind the glass. And we're going to continue the comparison between the Texans and the Rockets because, look, Houston's 2 rebuilding franchises. The Astros have been carrying the city for the better part of the past 6-7 years. And all of a sudden, the Texans and the Rockets are finally, we're finally starting to see some green shoots after years of awfulness. And look, we compared the drafts and what the Texans did versus what the Rockets did last segment, but we're going to go a little bit deeper now and compare the jobs that Nick Caserio and Rafael Stone have done, because I think it can be argued that they came into relatively similar situations.
Oh, yeah. Like, forced to trade your star player.
Exactly. Forced to trade your star player. Just there's a lot of similarities between what they have had to do. So we'll start with you here, Joe, but who do you feel has done a better job with the situation they were handled, given the fact that there are such similarities between the two?
I think right now the answer is Rafael Stone. And I know he has an extra year of first-round picks versus Caserio, so it kind of weights it a little bit. But let's take Thursday night out of it, okay? You have, of your 3 main core pieces, you traded up for Alperen Şengün, you have Jalen Green, and you have Jabari Smith Jr. Like, those are the guys to focus in on. Because to me, a guy like Josh Christopher, you're talking about equivalent to like a 4th-round pick in the NFL. Like, at that point in the draft, that draft point was so bad that, like, it's a flyer. Same with Usman Garuba. Like, you do not draft Usman Garuba to hope that he is a superstar player at that point in the draft. You're hoping he's a role player, a contributor to a basketball team. And the biggest difference is that while I really like Evan Mobley and I like Scottie Barnes, I still think if you could go back in time, people would take Jalen Green.
Just because the ceiling is higher.
And I don't think anyone would ever say go back in time and take Sauce and not take Sauce Gardner over Derek Stingley.
That's the thing, right? And on top of that, too, this is going to be the first offseason where we can really see Rafael Stone make an impact on the free agent market. This is going to be the first time that he has significant money to play with in free agency. We haven't seen that for the Rockets before. So obviously, to some degree, this is still an incomplete just because of the fact that we've seen Nick Caserio have his first real free agency. And I think by and large, most people think that he did a pretty good job with it. So obviously the grade is still slightly incomplete, but even with that being the case, I think you're probably right just because of the fact that there are too many question marks with some of the moves that Nick Caserio has made in the draft. The one time that he absolutely had to hit a home run with the trade, he did with the Deshaun Watson trade. I believe that the Texans did a better job maximizing their return for Deshaun Watson than the Rockets did maximizing their return for James Harden. But outside of that, you can say conceivably that the Rockets have set themselves up with some cornerstone pieces if the chips fall the right way for the next decade plus. I don't know if you can say, outside of what we saw with Will Anderson and CJ Stroud in this past draft, I'm not sure that you can necessarily say the same. The book is still out on Derek Stingley. It's yet to be written.
And I think he's, I still think he's going to be good.
I agree. I still believe that he's going to be a good player. I mean, from what we've seen in minicamp, he looks like he's come back stronger, fitter, and look, there's no question about the athleticism and the ball playing ability. It's just a matter of, is he going to be able to stay healthy? But that being said, like, that's a massive part of the equation. And when someone who's picked the pick directly after you is an all-pro in their rookie year,
it's tough.
Like, I don't really care how good, like, Derek Stingley becomes. Like, it's going to have to be, like, the comparison is always going to be to Sauce Gardner. And maybe this is Sauce Gardner's best ever year, and it's all downhill from here. I think that the history would probably trend against that being the case.
Yep.
But, like, look, whenever you make a selection like that, where the person behind you has just such immediate success, it's going to be tough. And then you look at Kenyon Green. You had multiple other offensive linemen who play in the interior of the line who were selected after Kenyon Green who had significantly better rookie years.
Yep, and that's where I think it really comes down to is like the immediate returns have been more in favor of the Rockets, where really only Evan Mobley you could point to and say he was significantly better than Jalen Green so far. Like, Jalen Suggs has been kind of a bust. Josh Giddey's been pretty good, but I don't think that to me is almost too revisionist history sometimes. Like, when you, like, Josh Giddey was not in the conversation for the number two pick in the draft in 2021. You could say he's a really good basketball player. Franz Wagner is a really good basketball player for the Magic. Like, no one was taking Franz at number two. He went eight to the Magic. So that's where, like, it gets kind of complicated when you're talking about, like, revisionist history of like how these GMs did. You can really only do, like, the direct result. And that's where I think it seems like Stone has done a better job. It's funny because both GMs, like, over-meddled.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one guy was, like, calling plays and challenges from the top, and one guy was getting involved in practice and trying to tell people what to do. Who did it better? It's hard to say.
Well,
like, they both had bad coaches. They both have really not developed talent. And look, for the most part, it's been bad. What's funny about both of them is that I think both of them should have been fired.
Really?
I think they should have fired Stone and Caserio. I really, like, I really believe, like, it is my, will always be my stance that it makes the most sense to fire a head coach and a GM and move together as an organization going forward. Because, you know, like, does Nick Caserio want to trade all that draft capital for Will Anderson? Or is he only doing it because D'Amico Ryans wants him?
Yeah, you're in a position where the head coaches of both franchises seemingly have more power than their general managers.
And I don't like that.
That's a very strange dynamic.
It would be better if the Texans would have hired someone from San Francisco to come with D'Amico, in my opinion, and they could work together more. And where Nick Caserio is thinking, I need to keep my job. So does Rafael Stone. Like, maybe the safe pick was, like, a guy like Jairus Walker at four. But Rafael Stone in his mind is saying, if I take Jairus Walker, it's too safe. He doesn't have the upside. But Amen Thompson, you know, he has that upside to save my job. And it's not necessarily about winning a team. That's what I don't like about it. So, like, it's so funny how, like, these two organizations are really just, like, in lockstep with, like, the direction that they're heading right now.
Yeah, and one last thing on the work that they've done in the draft. It feels like Rafael Stone, for the most part, has sort of had a lot of things fall into his lap in terms of, oh, we're picking third in a three-man draft, so we're going to get whoever's left over when they fall to number three, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like he's had a lot of decisions to make. Nick Caserio could have done a very similar thing and has chosen not to So for me, at least, that's a point in Rafael Stone's book where, 100%. Hey, keep it simple, stupid. Like, it's a three-man draft, or by most appearances from what we see from scouts, whatever, draft the third guy. You get Jabari Smith Jr. Like, if Nick Caserio had just kept it simple, I feel a lot of people would have significantly less reservations about the guy than they currently do.
Yeah, definitely. And what's going to be interesting, though, is that all these, like, or like, I also feel generally positive about Rafael Stone. It really comes down to this offseason, because all of that is gone if he signs James Harden.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily him. It's just like everything that, like, I feel good about the Rockets organization right now has the potential to be washed away in a week. Like, if they go get James Harden, I just think that's such a catastrophic disaster, because I would rather be mediocre or bad again next season if I was the Rockets, and let Ime Udoka get his hands on these kids. Keep KPJ, keep Josh Christopher, keep these guys who are massive question marks, Garuba, and see like what these 8 or 9 guys under 22 years old, like what they really look like. And then you go forward. So, like, yeah, you have to spend money this year. Cool, man. Pay a bunch of veterans like $30 million to sit their ass on the bench. Like, I don't really even want them to play, like, necessarily. Now, I like Brook Lopez a lot. I think Brook Lopez would be great for this team. But, like, I don't need James Harden on this team. I want to see what the young core is and what direction they can move forward as a franchise, because, like, that's what they need.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, right, is you want – if the young core develops the way that you want it to – it's going to lead to a significantly brighter future, even if it's a little bit more pain in the short term. And when you compare the futures of these two franchises, I feel like it's hard to say that the Rockets don't have, at least from what I can see, the higher overall ceiling in terms of how bright their future could be.
What's so funny, though, is because, like, and we'll touch on this a little bit at the end of the show, like the Dak Prescott, CJ Stroud comparison. If C.J. Stroud's Dak Prescott, you still got to go through Pat Mahomes, Justin Herbert, like Joe Burrow, all like Trevor Lawrence. Dude, the Rockets are in the West. Like, some people like the West. I think the West is like ready for a disaster besides the Denver Nuggets.
It's going to be open in a few years. It is going to be wide open in a few years.
Like, you're talking about like the Sacramento Kings? Come on. They're the Kings. Yeah. All their players are going to demand trades at some point. Like, we all know that's how that's going to work. We worry about fat Pelicans. Like, come on. Like, what are we doing here? Like, the Rockets, they get the benefit of the doubt because, you need less players to be good. And I just think the West is going to be way easier to win long-term than the AFC and the NFL. And so it's not even an anti-CJ or Texans thing. It's just, it's a bad time to be a team in the AFC.
Yeah, there's way more talent the Texans are going to have to go through than the Rockets were going to have to go through. Up next, Dusty Baker is finally starting to put some of these internal solutions that the Astros have talked about into action. Mauricio Dubon at first base. Yonner Diaz actually consistently seeing the field. Is it enough for the Astros to start turning things around before they make a move heading into the trade deadline? We discuss that next. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. One of these guys cheats at fishing.
We got weights and fish.
There we go.